Hello, and welcome to the Idaho Reports podcast. I'm producer Ruth Brown. Today, I'm joined by Senate Assistant Majority Leader Abby Lee to talk to me about some bills that came out of the Child Protection Oversight Committee. Thanks for joining me, Senator Lee.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Let's start with a bill regarding the number of foster children that were being housed in temporary shelters and Airbnbs. Can you walk me through what that bill would do?
Yeah, so just maybe just a little background. It was only about 4 or 5 years ago where we started really having a need to put to find places for children to be. And I will take that back to, I think, some of the concerns that we have with the department being able to attract foster families, and we can talk about that later. And so there was a need. What happens when we remove children from a home and they have to stay somewhere? And so initially they were being put in hotel rooms and caseworkers were staying with them. And then some of the federal actions and state actions with the families first, we really wanted children to be in home-like settings. And so these temporary houses, Airbnbs, whatever we want to call them, were set up to ensure that when a child was removed, they could go to a place that has a bedroom and more of a home-like setting. But these were still supposed to be temporary, and they were supposed to be set up just for the most hard-to-place kids. So think teenagers and children with really significant behavior issues. What we found over the last 4 years is this really is the go-to solution. And so we have had over 170 kids that have been put in these temporary houses. And a temporary house means that you could have a different caregiver every single night. So it's not a home-like setting. And as we looked into this issue, and I've been pushing the department for the last couple of years to get a better solution, and instead they continue to expand it, we are concerned that we're putting small children, toddlers, young children with teenagers in those same home-like settings, but they're not siblings. And so this bill really puts some policy parameters around what the department can and cannot do, and it is very specific. Primarily that these are supposed to be the way that they were set up for teenagers with behavioral issues, and if we can put children in a regular foster home, that's ideal. It does allow for children who have a sibling group. So if you're a toddler, but you have a 6-year-old sibling and a 13-year-old sibling, you can stay together. That's important. But we need to be cognizant about who else is in that temporary house. And then if the department does make that decision, this takes it all the way up to the director level, where it has to get approval at that director level, which I think is going to give some real transparency. You've heard me say before, sunshine is the best thing for kids. And so having more people look at these decisions, I think, is going to systemically and systematically change what we're doing.
Are there concerns that there will not be enough foster homes? There's been a shortage. The Department of Health and Welfare regularly talks about the shortage. Are there concerns that there are not enough foster homes to put these children in?
Right. So what do we do? Right.
Yes.
What do we do when we have a 2-year-old and we don't know where to place them? I will offer that I've spent 10 years working on this issue, and we have families who will help, particularly with younger children. That there's a softer heart sometimes and maybe just different behaviors or more ability to deal with some of the traumas that these children come with. I think the department has not been looking for those options. And so this gives them specific direction to do that. It also gives them the authority. If they truly have nowhere else to place a child, but the director has to sign off on it. And so I think it gives those sideboards, but also kind of a catch-all if we need to get there. The department needs to reach out to foster families. And we have a culture problem, and you heard me say we have a leadership problem in this area. We have good families in this state. And everywhere I go, people say, Senator Lee, thanks for your work on foster care. If you're in this community, we all kind of talk to each other, and having been a former foster parent, I have some connections in that community. And they say, thanks for your work. I was a foster parent in Idaho, and I will never be a foster parent in Idaho again. And so that's the group that we have to appeal to. We have to say, come back. Things will change. Things are changing. These are families who have already had a heart for this work. And again, I'm saddened that we have to put such a policy parameter on these actions, where you would think that people who are subject matter experts would already know how to do this with best practices. You know, I'm not a caseworker, but I play one in the legislature, and it shouldn't be up to us to direct that. But that's where we are.
Another bill working its way through the building would establish an ombudsman for child protection. Can you talk to me about the goal there?
Yeah, I think the goal is also what happens when we're in the middle of a crisis. So, when I came to the legislature years ago, we were starting to look at emergency moves where children were being moved with no notice. So you had a foster child in your home. They just didn't come home from school that day because the caseworker just moved them to another home. Think about that trauma. And we had to pass a law to ensure that that wasn't happening. 10 years down the road, that is still happening. And there is no place for people to go and complain. And so this really was born out of the number of phone calls that I continue to get directly to say, Senator Lee, the law's being broken. We're not following the 7-day notice. Just meaning that if a child's going to be moved, you have to give 7 days notice.
To the foster parent.
To the foster parent and the child. So the child can pack their things and we can have some kind of a change. And if 7 days is not allowed or available because there's an emergency, within 7 days you have to document the reason. And so you have to say what that reason was. It safety in the home? And that has created what I thought we were creating was accountability. Instead, I'm still getting the phone calls that these moves are being made. And so we, along with Representative Raybould, who really has a heart for this work, we're creating kind of a self-governing group, similar to what we did on the administrative hearings, to be able to say what happens when you try to go up against a department, and not against a department, but in support of a child. And so having a grievance that can be looked at immediately instead of 4 months down the road after that action has taken place is really the intent behind this. And you know, some of the criticism is how many watchers are we going to have? But this one I offer that we do that in a lot of other places. We have police ombudsmen. We have other kinds of community ombudsmen. And this one will empower this self-governing group to immediately look at things that are going to be detrimental for children.
The bill makes very clear that the Ombudsman's Office would work independently of the Department of Health and Welfare. The Department of Health and Welfare runs the foster care system. Can you talk to me about the importance there of why did you strategically separate them?
Because I think that we thought we had a grievance process within the department, and it's not working. And so we really need to disrupt this, and we need a place for people to go. Again, as I shared, I get a lot of these phone calls. I'm retiring this year, and it's also not a functional way to have a legislator intervene. I also am limited in the ability to do anything with this information. It's all confidential. So the Ombudsman Office would be designed to be able to intervene, actually, to be able to get to an immediate crisis if a child was being moved or if there was something egregious going on. That Ombudsman Office has that authority. And it has to be separate from the department because they have to be able to, I think, sometimes overrule some of those decisions.
The Department of Health and Welfare has said that they are increasing the daily payment for some foster homes in emergency situations like this to help help find housing for these children. Do you have concerns that increasing the payment might bring families in who are there for the wrong reasons, who aren't there because, you know, they want to help the children of Idaho?
Yeah, I think that there are easier ways to make money in this state. and I've never heard from a foster family who's left the service of foster care that they left because of payment. They leave because of lack of support, lack of respite, lack of attention to the kiddos' needs. And we don't want to professionalize this. I mean, there is a heart for foster care. So while I've always supported increased payments, I don't think that that's the incentive. And so I'm less concerned about that. I am concerned that we are not putting enough resources into making sure that we have enough services and payment for really hard to place kids. And so instead of trying to find ways, and I have challenged the department and they're they're responding. So this response that you just offered is one that I told them that I wanted them to do. Rather than put children in therapeutic institutions out of state, can't we find people in Idaho who their full-time job would be to help this child, and that we would also have to scaffold that? And so if it is more a higher daily rate, wouldn't that be better for these children? And we can think outside the box. KC Families is an incredible organization that has best practices, and we should be following those best practices.
You have been very vocal about your frustrations with the Department of Health and Welfare, and particularly with foster care. Stepping away, you are retiring this year. What are your biggest concerns around the foster care system and health and welfare?
I think my biggest concern is whenever I challenge, and again, I think I've been one of the biggest advocates for the Department of Health and Welfare. I mean, you saw when I served on the Joint Finance Appropriation Committee, I forced them to take more money for caseworkers. I encouraged them to ask for the things that they needed. But I think we have a systemic and systematic dysfunction. And when I challenge the practices, I get responses that have to do with, again, policies and procedures, and I don't get what's the best thing for kids. What is the best thing for these kids? And these children are in our care because of the dysfunctions of their families. It's their parents' problem. But once we intervene as a government, then we have a responsibility to do better. And I think that's my biggest fear, is that I hope other people will pick this up. I think we've elevated the conversation. I'm so proud of this legislature for expanding foster care to age 21, even with a fiscal note, and really scaffolding some of the most vulnerable children. So I think we've elevated the conversation, but we have to make some changes at that department. And I am not picking on people, and I'm not trying to be unkind, but I am unapologetic about what responsibility we have to ensure that the most vulnerable, traumatized, and abused children in our state have a voice, and we have to be that voice if the department's not going to be.
You mentioned expanding it to the age of 21. Can you think of any other improvements you've seen in the last 10 years?
So I wish I could leave super encouraged. But
no, that's all right.
I think the funding, I think home visiting has been improvements. I think as we look at some of those efforts to, you know, increasing pay is always a good thing. But I think I will know that we've been successful if these last couple of bills go through. And I'm feeling positive about the conversations that we're having. I'm feeling really positive about the support. And then I'm hopeful that the executive branch will do the things that they need to do to change. If we had a failing high school, so we have about 3,000 kids in foster care. If we had a school that had 3,000 kids that we were failing, we would bring in a turnaround team. And that wouldn't be unkind, and it wouldn't be mean. It would be, we would bring in some change agents to say, how can we do this better? And how can we reimagine this? And how can we, Idaho is a small enough state that we could wrap our arms around this, and we could be a model for the entire nation. We could get this right.
Senator Lee, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Support for Idaho Public Television comes from the School of Public Service at Boise State University, providing objective and impactful research for Idaho and beyond, and academic programs with hands-on learning that equip students to be effective public service leaders.
Presentation of Idaho Reports on Idaho Public Television is made possible through the generous support of the Laura Moore Cunningham Foundation, committed to fulfilling the Moore and Bettis family legacy of building the great state of Idaho, by the Friends of Idaho Public Television, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.